I mean, look at Bitcoin, right? It's like a $1 trillion asset. It's been 15 years and the normies are still not on it. You know, if we break SHA-256, airplanes fall off the sky before Bitcoin stops. That this industry is only going to grow more until most people can't buy on-chain anymore. But we have a good decade between now and then.
Now, so are you saying Tether's like pretty close to a CBDC here in this scenario?
I mean, you know, it's one of those things. I mean,
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, NVK in the house, founder of CoinKite, creator of Cold Card as well. But NVK, obviously, you're very big into self-custody. But the big wave that's happened within this past year or so is BlackRock and all these traditional financial people coming into Bitcoin and trying to offer these ETF products. Do BlackRock and all of these big money managers coming into Bitcoin worry you in a sense? We've even had BlackRock make a video about potentially changing or trying to change the overall fixed supply of Bitcoin. So do these things, in a sense, worry you about the Bitcoin space going forward?
Thanks for having me, Brandon. I'm not worried.
Okay, great. Why? Explain to the audience why you aren't worried here about these traditional financial people.
So here's the thing, right? Like, I mean, Bitcoin is working as designed, right? You know, many, many, many years ago, eons ago in Bitcoin, we would like dream about the day that, you know, our enemies would also buy Bitcoin, right? And now it's happening. So it's part of the deal. Here's the thing. You know, Bitcoin is available to anyone, but Bitcoin is not for everyone, right? Especially the actual UTXOs on chain. As I like to say, there is not enough sats for everybody. So, you know, when you do the math and you put in like the throughput of the chain and everything else, it's just completely unrealistic that 8 billion people are going to just buy, you know, Bitcoin on an exchange. Let's put it this way. So, you know, the ETFs, the MicroStrategies, all these proxies for coin, they kind of like function as a L2, right? It's if you're doing Lightning without like non-custodial Lightning, you know, it's not too far to say that essentially you just have an IOU in Bitcoin, right? So what happens right now is retail comes in, right? And they're buying these IOUs for a Bitcoin proxy, right? And that actually relieves a lot of on-chain pressure. So that makes transactions cheap on-chain, which is not a terrible thing because it gives us time to develop more L2s and other payment solutions. But, you know, these things are also not real Bitcoin, right? So, you know, like I want as many people as possible to buy Bitcoin. But realistically speaking, you know, like it's not going to happen the way that we all utopically like. So, you know, I rather this sort of independent entities buy than countries buy. If I have to stack that on my personal preference kind of thing. But, you know, like it's for anyone that can buy it. So if they're going to buy it, great. They're going to have it. And then people can buy. Hopefully, you know, there are enough shareholders within BlackRock that, you know, they choose the right fork and don't have fun staying poor. You know, with like MicroStrategy, unless like, you know, Saylor changes his mind. I mean, the guy's taking his Bitcoin to Valhalla, right? We're going to see a lot more of this, right? That's the reality. We're going to see like, you know, like North Korea having a bunch of it. We're going to have, you know, we're going to see like communist places like New York maybe buys it, right? Like there is all kinds of people that will have it. And most of these large entities that have it, they will sell proxies to themselves, right? Like that be bonds, that be whatever it is. And that doesn't really affect the self-custody at all. Like, you know, if anything, it makes cheaper, right, for us to buy the coins and stick them in self-storage. And, you know, we doubled our company size last year. So, like, with competing with BlackRock and all these ETFs and shit, like, people are still buying Bitcoin, storing them in cold cards. So you know, like, it's not like it's slowing down. You know, we see more competitor products coming onto the market, so that it's also an indication there's more people coming to self-custody. You know, TapSigner sold, like, I don't know, like 3-4 times more than the previous year last year, so more people in self-custody. I think people just need to stop worrying and go walk and smell the roses, you know, like, that's what Bitcoin is for, is for people to buy it. It's just going to be people you don't like.
Yeah, I hear you with that, but you said something interesting there about, you know, maybe L1, you know, on the Bitcoin base layer, not everybody's going to be able to have Bitcoin, and it's almost like Lightning is an IOU. Now, I want you to dive into that a little bit more, because it sounds like, you know, the peer-to-peer electronic cash might not be entirely feasible for the amount of scaling and to get 8 billion people on that. Is that kind of what you see here?
So there is a spectrum, right? It's not black and white. There is many forms of Lightning as well. There is self-custodial Lightning and all the way to fully sort of custodial Lightning, right? And like, I think the extrapolation is like Lightning will support about 200 million people kind of thing, 200 million entities. See, I think people like Lightning right now, it's cool to, you know, buy little things and, you know, feed chickens, but Lightning, so think about it like this, okay? The L1 is like BIS, is how very large entities clear, or very large sort of transactions clear, right? Because it's full finality. L2, so Lightning, in any form of Lightning, it's not quite an IOU. The IOU is only if you have custodial Lightning, right? Lightning is more how like wire transfers function, right? It's like people to people sending out like larger transactions in the future, not now. Right now, you can still feed chickens. And then where we're going to have is L3s, right? That's where I think the bulk of human sort of population is going to be. You know, like, we're going to have like, you know, 8 billion and non-human population too. So computer to computer. So, and they're going to be using things like eCash, right? Like where you can abstract one more layer up, right? And you can have sort of like free banking type of systems that enable all these people to have Lightning, like to have like subunits of Bitcoin. And they can use the Lightning channels on how this mints, the Zcash mints, sort of like clear of each other. It's actually quite simple to think about it, right? Like, so you have the BIS thing, you have the wire thing, and then you have something like a credit card or a like club credit system, right? Like, and you know, that's how you find the efficiencies you need in each level, right? Credit cards are amazing because they're so efficient, because they're centralized, right? I mean, you know, like Amex is fantastic. I mean, it just fucking works, right? As long as you're not debanked, it works. You know, and the thing that most people don't have is money. So like, you know, like most people, like their challenge is saving, because they just don't have, like, they spend more than they make, right? I mean, the debasement is part of it, but if you're realistically speaking, it's just, they just don't have enough money to save. So if we can help them at least like not be censored when they save, not be censored when they spend, and maybe, you know, help them when they do save a little bit is in a non-debasable money, then you're a much better place.
Okay, that's interesting. Now, before we kind of dive more into that, you also said something interesting where you would say your goal would be to more individuals obtain Bitcoin. Now, we had an announcement this past weekend about the strategic reserve here, where Trump is now implementing all of these, you know, shit coins and everything else. Obviously, you know, in the Bitcoin community, we would want it just to be Bitcoin and Bitcoin only. But do you think that this is a positive for Bitcoin going forward? Negative? Just how do you view basically the U.S. just getting a basket of crypto as opposed to just going full on a Bitcoin standard?
I mean, it's kind of irrelevant to Bitcoin in mid long term. Bitcoin doesn't give a shit. you know, Bitcoin is not an American money. It's a completely independent money, so it doesn't really make any difference. You know, it makes difference that the biggest money printer on the planet, you know, would be buying it, so it would pump the bags now. But realistically speaking, what really happened was, you know, you have you know, the president of America, you know, dumping on retail and then pumping, and then they're gonna dump on retail again. You know, they're printed shit coins, right? Like, it is like, I mean, I'm not surprised at all, but you know, it is quite remarkable to live in a timeline where you see the overt scam happening like so on your face. Like, people really don't give a shit anymore, right? Like, when you're talking about, like, you know, poop coin being part of the U.S. Reserve, or it is absurd. I mean, it really is absurd. It's an affront to any sort of level of decency. But, you know, I mean, you know, the sort of the Republic, the Empire does not give a shit, right? Like, I mean, those guys are going to do what they're going to do.
The best place to buy Bitcoin in the United States and Canada is the Bitcoin Well. You could go to thebitcoinwell.com/greencandle and sign up today, and they will give you wishing well tokens. They are one of the only exchanges in the United States that will give you free sats every time you buy Bitcoin. You have a chance to win 1 million sats every time you buy. You get wishing well tokens. You flip the coin down the wishing well, and you have the chance to win 1 million sats. You heard me here, folks. 1 million sats. And on top of that, they have the absolute best over-the-counter service where you can make purchases over $50,000, and they will walk you through the whole thing. They have the best rates in the United States and in Canada. And on top of that, they have the best white glove service where they will take you through those giant purchases just so you feel comfortable. You'll get it in cold storage, and it's strictly non-custodial. They are saying, we want you to experience the true power of Bitcoin, and that's self-custody. So go to the well, sign up, bitcoinwell.com/greencandle today. Enough for me, back to the show. Yeah, there was actually like some insider trading going on. Somebody put like a $200 million short or something like that onto ETH and Bitcoin. And, you know, I guess that if Bitcoin would have fell by like 2% or something like that, it would have crashed. But instead, you know, they got a $200 million payout. So, I mean, there's definitely some insider trading, and there's the pumping and dumping is definitely not being hidden anymore, which is kind of interesting. But, I asked you that question because, what you said about the layer threes and kind of, you know, the transacting is somewhat interesting because, we have the largest money printer, obviously, and maybe with Trump and kind of the way policies are going, they might try to back the dollar or try to implement something with Bitcoin, kind of the layer one at the base layer, right? Maybe going on to a Bitcoin standard instead of a gold standard. Do you see that as a possibility, or are we just going to have to get away from these governments before we get to a full-fledged, I guess, Bitcoin standard?
We cannot do anything in that sense. Like, we are also irrelevant in that sense. You got to just let the market play out, right? It's like, you know, just turn off the fucking TV, turn off the radio, buy the Bitcoin, and go milk some cows, you know? Like, who cares? I mean, like, seriously, just exit from the insanity, including on the news and the rhetoric, because it makes no difference, right? It's equivalent of, like, you know, say you went into a coma, okay, and Bitcoin was, I don't know, 10K, right? And then you wake up 5 years later, 6 years later, and Bitcoin is like 50 or 100, right? Like, did you do anything in the meanwhile that caused Bitcoin to do anything? Like, no, you probably have just lost Bitcoin by trading, by trying to be smart, or by spending, right? So I think a much better sort of framework is just ignore everything that's happening, because, you know, you can't affect change in any of this stuff, right? And just sort of go live your life and stack sats and stay humble and stack sats, right?
No, I mean, I hear you, right? As Odell says, stay humble and stack sats, right? But you're looking into a lot of AI, or at least I've heard you on a few other podcasts about looking into the development of AI and kind of how that plays a role. You mentioned that Bitcoin can be the transactional layer from computer to computer. And it seems like these two industries, AI and Bitcoin, are basically growing faster than the internet was as far as adoption. So how do you kind of see all this playing out just initially from some of the things that you're looking at? And what are some of the things about the AI space that are really intriguing to you?
Yeah, so AI has been happening in cycles since like the 50s, right? There's been hype cycles and this whole machine learning space sort of like has been evolving, right? But after Google's deep learning algos, like there's been a lot of breakthroughs. I mean, it is remarkable what you get now. Like we got to a point where you have a system that is smart enough that is very useful and helpful. The tooling around is still sort of immature, but it's improving. So things connect without you having to talk to a chatbot, right? Like this whole chatbot thing has limits in terms of usability. But anyways, the point is, you know, I don't know how much this audience sort of like looks into Noster and what's happening on that space, but we have this thing called digital vending machines on Noster, right? And it's essentially a protocol that lives inside Noster for job requests, right? And this job request could be like pretty much anything, right? So now imagine if instead of having to ask a chatbot to sort of do something to you, you just clicked on a button. Say, for example, you press the button translate, right? And it's some obscure language or whatever. So the chat, or it's your preference, right? Like it goes out there, it translates the job for you, all paid in sats, right? Using Lightning, and then returns the result for you, right? And that could be research. That could be, for example, I don't know, let's say an account is bothering you on Noster, right? And you want to know if that account is like a sock of somebody, right? You can probably do some analysis on that. Now imagine if these things are all sort of automated and part of the client, right? These things start to become part of your life because they're fully integrated into the tools that you use. And I think we're really going in that direction. That's why sort of like we have this playground, the data machine.ai. It's a little project that I have where we're playing with some of this stuff and trying to sort of see where we go. It's very early in this space, but I think it'd be naive to think that it's definitely not going that direction.
Yeah, and I mean, Noster is very early. So for those who don't know, why don't you explain a little bit about just, you know, a high level what Noster is and the importance you see of kind of decentralizing things like social media communication and things like that going forward?
Yeah, so Noster is... It stands for notes and other things related. Relayed. Oh shit, I forgot now.
I think it's transmitted over relays.
Transmitted over relays. Essentially, it's a very simple protocol for you to create signed messages, right? So that could be a tweet. That could be a longer post. That could be a like event, any kind of event, including content, but it's signed cryptographically by your keys, right? So it's similar to Bitcoin in that sense. You have keys, and then you sign them, and they go out there into the world, live in these relays. They're kind of like the servers that then relay to other clients. And this is all sort of like a convoluted explanation. To say that you can have a decentralized Twitter, you can have a decentralized Facebook, you can have a decentralized market, you can have a decentralized Instagram, where you own your content and you choose a distribution of your content. And the people who are consuming that content chooses the algorithms that display that content to them. They choose where they take that content from. It's kind of like you have full rights, just like Bitcoin, same idea, right? Like you choose where your coin goes to, nobody can stop that, right? it's sort of like a flip on the world we live right now, which is fully permissioned. And if you haven't tried Nostr yet, just go on primal.net and create an account there and start posting. It's like, you know, you cannot tell the difference between Twitter or Primal in that sense, or Olas for your Instagram needs, or, you know, go play around. It really is remarkable how good the system already is, and it's so early on it.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that, because I agree. It is really early on a lot of these things, but I think it's going to take something to kind of get the normie world over to it. Now, is that something that you think about at all, of like, what is it going to take to get, I guess, like, normies more involved into the decentralization of money, as well as, you know, the communication and social media aspect? Or do you, just kind of put your head down and just focus on building?
I think, like, building the tech is more important than trying to sell the tech. You know, if the tech is good enough, it sells itself. I mean, look at Bitcoin, right? It's like a $1 trillion asset. It's been 15 years and the normies are still not on it. So does it matter when the normies come? No, they're low value, right? They're just consumers. What we want on Nostr is content producers, right? And that's starting to come. It's just more tools need to be built. It takes time, right? Nostr is, what, 3 years old. I am not very concerned, because it is like we're getting the waves of adoption and it's happening, right? And because Nostr is open and is cross integrated on the whole protocol, supports all the things we need, you can have things that Twitter can't have. Like, for example, you can have zaps. So that means you can, like, give people small amounts of Bitcoin because you like their post, for example, right? And it's uncensorable money. So it's not like you have to, you know, like, KYC and give blood sample to Elon in order to get it, to get those 10, like, those 50 cents sent to your bank account, right? And, you know, you can have markets right on posts. And, you know, it's sort of like the rabbit hole is deep. But the cool thing is, we have all these usabilities just was not possible before in centralized systems. And people are starting to take advantage of it. There is, like, interesting creators already on Nostr. And that's sort of, like, I think, the main focus of adoption right now.
My favorite thing about Bitcoin is meeting Bitcoiners in person. That's why I'm so excited to tell you guys about what is going on June 14th down in beautiful Tampa Bay, Florida. That's the Sound Money Soiree paired with Bitcoin Day. They're bringing a full day of great talks with amazing speakers like your boy here. And we're topping it off with a black tie event just for you, and bring in that hot lady friend. We have Bitcoin cross 100K. We're all getting girlfriends, folks. So come on down to beautiful Tampa, Florida. And if you use the link below, you will get 10% off your entire order, whether you want to go to just the black tie event or black tie event plus Bitcoin Day, you'll get 10% off using the links below. Also, if you're thinking about going to BitBlock Boom in April, if you're going to Vegas in May, or if you're thinking about going to Prague in June, use my promo code GreenCandle for all of those. You'll get 10% off your entire order. And come bug me. I hope to see you guys very soon at one of these great in-person events. Enough for me. Back to the show. Yeah, and I do think that there's some interesting creators. One of the interesting ones that I see posting on Nostr quite a bit is Jack Dorsey. Obviously, with his connection to Twitter, I think it's interesting just kind of how much he's embraced, Nostr and everything going forward with that. And maybe I'll ask a little conspiratorial thing here. Do you think it's just because he's had a peek behind the hood of potential social media and, some of the negatives that come with having a full-fledged centralized social media, that this is why he's pushing for potential, decentralized social media messaging in a sense?
I think what happened here is that, you know, you have somebody who built a gigantic system, right? And lost control of that system because that system is centralized. So I think, you know, when you have a dynamic like that, you know, if your interest is in advancing humanity and not just capturing all that value for yourself and making the world a worse place, you know, the thing to do is to support open protocols, right? I mean, initially Twitter was an open protocol. You could connect to Twitter using any kind of clients you want, all the APIs and all that stuff, but it progressively became more closed down because, you know, advertisers. So I really think that, you know, I mean, I'm not him, but from the many conversations I've had, you know, it comes from a place of just wanting the protocols to be open and above people's personal preferences.
Yeah, I hear you with that. And I think that's going to be the wave in the future is going to see these open protocols. But, you know, with Nostr, Bitcoin and everything else, what do you see as some of the pain points as far of like the development side of that? And what needs to be done to kind of, I guess, like further build these open protocols to help bring on these 8 billion people?
I think I want to see more business people come in. Like, I want to see people who just have the more sort of innate sort of the intuition towards building the things that people want to pay for. You know, business not as the dirty word, sort of like more. It's just like there is this whole category of people who just have this intuition on like, you know, oh, obviously these people all want to pay for this one little thing, so I should build that little thing, right? As opposed to engineers just sort of building things that they want to just see exist and don't necessarily have a market fit or a desire by users to use it. I think both are important, but I want to see more of the business people come in. And I think that is starting to happen. You start to see more polished clients and more interesting things that have this more natural product fit with users. It's more like a matter of time than anything you can force it.
Yeah, let's dive into that a little bit more. So you mean like, I guess, solutions built on Nostr for or like utilizing Bitcoin in businesses? Kind of like, I guess, like Amazon is a good example where, you know, Amazon originally just started as this online library where you could just buy books and eventually created AWS because it was a need for the business. Now, are you kind of, I guess, like hinting towards something like that where it's not necessarily like an AWS, but kind of looking at these problems within a business and building them on an open protocol?
Well, yes, a little bit of that would be great. But it's more like, for example, you know, like somebody identifies that there is a need to share pictures of dogs, right? Like there's like a huge market of dog picture sharing or something, right? And then they make a client that's just designed for that. You know, they clearly, it's so good that people want to pay for it, right? And it's fully integrated the rest of the open protocol. So that would be like sort of like an absurd little, but also very likely to happen kind of. It would be probably cats before dogs, but, you know, something like that. It's just sort of like identifying these needs and not being afraid of pursuing them, because maybe there is not a lot of interesting engineering challenges in that solution. So like pure high quality engineers may not be as interested in that, but somebody that's interested more in the market fit, the business of it, may pursue that. That's sort of like what I have in mind.
Okay, that makes a little bit more sense. But I hope it would be dogs before cats there, MVK. I'm more of a dog person myself.
Same, but you know, the internet seems to be cats before dogs, so.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. There's a lot of weird people on the internet, I guess. But you mentioned L3s a little bit earlier. So I want to dive into that because it seems like that is, I guess, the sense of what you see as like the future for the digital payments. Now, you mentioned Lightning has a lot of shortcomings. Can you kind of dive into that, what some of the shortcomings are for Lightning and what potential layer threes could, you know, fix from those issues?
So Lightning is quite remarkable technology, right? Because essentially, they're trying to create a state system, like their state for the amounts and you know what they're trying to. And Bitcoin does not support that, right? Bitcoin does not have this kind of scripting as part of the layer one. So it's kind of like a very clever hack on top of Bitcoin. But you know that comes with you know, some issues, right? Everything has trade-offs. And, you know, there's efficiency issues. But Lightning is also ultimately bound by Bitcoin's throughput per block, right? You can still only clear so much Lightning transactions when you have on-chain limits. So Lightning essentially starts to bog down after you have so many transactions trying to clear at the same time on chain. And what Cashew, for example, which is a eCash system, does is it leverages Lightning to clear between mints. So you have your mint, it has much better privacy than Lightning or Bitcoin does. And is a bearer token, right? It's essentially just a cryptographic token that you give to somebody else. And then they have it. they melt it and, you know, they get their own, but that's just technicalities. If you do a pay to key with Cashew, you also can do offline payments, which is really cool. So when you send a zap to somebody, send a little payment, they don't necessarily have to be online in order to receive it. That's super interesting. You know, you can create credit. I mean, you can create tokens, right? You're just believing that the mint, you know, there's ways of doing proofs and things, but to a certain extent, you're creating money. But the nice thing is the unit size, I mean, can be microscopic, right, of that payment. So, you know, if you're paying for metered server processing for AI, or you're you know, paying for these little things, you can do that extremely efficiently. You can also create apps that, you know, when they boot up and the person create a new Noster key, they immediately have a wallet, and that wallet lives in the Noster universe. Like, it doesn't, like, it's not even in the person's phone. All they need is their key. Olas works like that. So if you create a new a key through Olas, it creates a wallet for you, so that you can start zapping people immediately without having to KYC, create account, know what Bitcoin is, nothing. Like, it is absolutely remarkable that you can do that. So again, as you decrease the economic risk, right, size of economic throughput, you can increase these efficiencies and create these very cool systems.
Now, do you think that that's going to be, I guess, the future? You're almost describing a system similar to what we have now, maybe more of a credit-based system?
Well, the difference is it permission or not, right? Like, right now, you have to go beg Visa, MasterCard, Amex to increase your limit, right? Even if you had the money, it's still bound by them, right? Like, and the fees that you have to pay, the merchants have to beg them. So if you're a gun store, if you're a pot store, if you're a mushroom store, whatever is the not allowed thing today, you know, ivermectin store, you know, whatever it is, the thing, you have to beg for permission. They're not going to give it to you, right? Like, think about the Operation Choke Point, right? Or if you're outside of North America, right, that you have no access to credit cards, like literally no access. Like, they don't exist. The systems allow anyone to start accepting payments, right? That's really, really cool. They really are unstoppable. It's a bright future there.
Okay, so you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty. But simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's stored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So I'm going to help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at the Bitcoin Way and see how they can help you become self-sovereign.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you there, and it would be permissionless in a sense, but I'm just kind of curious about this, because you said that you wouldn't need, you don't necessarily like need the money here, right? So would that, would that almost stop what we kind of saw in like 2008, for example, right? Where,
Well, you need the money. So you can't just create like out of thin air, and like people won't trust your mint, right? Yeah. Like the difference is, you know, like when the push comes to shove, when people use the mint and they try to swap mints, for example, right? Like the mints have to clear between each other, right? So it's a much faster forest fire here to see who survives and who doesn't, right? Like the problem is like, with the current system is that, like, you know, it's like socialized losses, right? So you know, you have the bailouts in a sort of like in a freedom system here, there is no bailouts, right? And because the amounts are so little, you can combine what we call million mints, right? Like you can combine a you know, a hundredth of a cent, you know, from 1,000 different mints to make yourself $10. Right. And if one or two or 10 mints fail, like it is not an issue. Right. Like you are also de-risking by having more partners and having these things being extremely efficient. I think it's a much better place.
Yeah. So it almost seems like you won't necessarily have people, I guess, getting to a place where they're like over leveraged in a sense. Right. You have like people go into bankruptcy and everything like that. It would almost solve that problem. Am I understanding that correctly?
I think that problem never goes away because monkeys are idiotic, right? Like we're all monkeys and people are going to ape into things and they're going to leverage and they're going to do stupid shit. And like, look at shitcoins, right? It's a casino. And people create money out of thin air by creating a new coin, right? Like these things will never, if anything, they're going to become a million times worse as we progress into this freedom scale, right? But the difference is, if they want to be retards, you know, it is not my economic problem, right? Like I am not bailing out them with the debasement of my savings, right? I think that's a much like better place to be in.
Okay, that makes sense. And yeah, I mean, it is, I don't think that, you know, the shitcoin casino is ever going to go away. I mean, we had Brian Armstrong saying there's literally a million different crypto tokens created every single day and that Coinbase can't keep up to evaluate these. Obviously, if he would have just went Bitcoin only a long time ago, he wouldn't have this problem. But unfortunately, that's not where we're at today. But, you know, I'm curious how you see this playing out. Are you more of a, I guess, like a libertarian in a sense where you want to let the free and open market play itself out with all of these crypto tokens? Or do you think that there should be, I guess, stronger regulations to avoid a lot of these pump and dump schemes?
I don't think regulation does anything. It just pushes to the edges. So like regulation is pointless. What we do need is just, you know, it's like, you know, just be free, do whatever you want. And, you know, just also free to call your scam, right? But there is nothing holding back. Right. Like there's nothing really you can do. People find a way of being idiotic because of greed. Right. So, you know, teach your kids not to gamble. I mean, there really is nothing else you can do. And another thing, too, is exchanges are kind of irrelevant in the long term. You know, those things are all going to be just, you know, contracts on shitcoin chains or, you know, like a lot of decentralized exchanging is just starting to become more norm. As you need less rails to the legacy financial systems, you're going to need less exchanges. You know, look at Tether, right? I mean, you can have your permissioned CBDC USD without a bank account.
Now, so are you saying Tether is like pretty close to a CBDC here in this scenario?
I mean, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, it is the 16th largest purchasers of treasuries, right? So they're essentially reselling treasuries minus the interest. It's a wonderful business. I'm glad they're doing it. You know, these people are pro-freedom people. But reality is, like, you know, if you're selling dollars, right, the U.S. government might have something to say. So they had to build a system to create the censorship that the backing treasury owner, issuer, requires. Otherwise, they're all going to jail, right? So let's see how this goes. I mean, you know, props to them.
Yeah, I think it's like one of the most profitable businesses there is, but it is kind of something that worries me going forward. And obviously Bitcoin doesn't care, but in the short term, it could be something where it, you know, severely hinders Bitcoin, because it seems like, you know, a lot of the rails that people are buying utilize Tether. Now, do you see that as a potential, I guess, you know, choke point initially, where cutting off Tether, or is that something that worries you here going forward?
I have no worries.
All right. Well, I love to hear that, because, yeah, I mean, with Bitcoin, I think, you know, the true decentralized nature should make people more like you.
I mean, nowadays, you know, the president can go on, you know, like on TV, the American president can go on TV and say something stupid, and then boom, the price drops. So, like, you know, if your worry is on short term Bitcoin price, you're going to just like die of stress. You know, like, it's like it can go two ways every time that man shows up on TV, right? Like, it can go up or it can go down. So I don't think that's a way to live. It's like, it's a much better thing is to just, like, you know, save, you know, and organize yourself economically to be more like long term oriented, you know, hedge however you can, some of the volatility, so you can like plan your business and do your stuff. But, like, you know, you can't live based on the news and what the price is going to do tomorrow.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Now, I want to dive into the way you see the future of cold storage. Now, do you see that almost being like essentially like never going away, but people utilizing cold storage more as like a savings account? Or how do you see this kind of developing with transactionals as more people get onto Bitcoin to transact?
So I think there's essentially like most people operate their lives into like savings they don't touch, savings they may touch, like a checking account for daily operations, right? And then they have like a, like essentially like credit on a credit card, right? Like Bitcoin is no different, right? Like if you're living on the Bitcoin standard, you need like deep cold storage, right? So you put your cold card under a mountain somewhere, right? And that stuff you don't touch, it's for your grandchildren, right? And then you have like maybe some savings that's for like a rainy day kind of deal. So you don't have to go unearth a mountain to get to savings to fix your roof or whatever. And then you have your operating cash, right? Your checking account for you to live every day and to maybe operate your business, right? And then you have like a, you know, a spending wallet on your phone that probably is Lightning, right? And you know, you can have those first three in your cold card, right? So you can have your deep stuff, you know, maybe it's multi-sigged, and then you have your savings, it's another cold card, you know, and then you have your checking, you know, yet another one, more accessible, right? And then you have your Lightning wallet. And there's plenty of people who do live like that every day. I think that's only gonna progress. More people are gonna go towards that, just because, you know, you see the amount of home invasions, you see the amount of like people getting hacked. Like, you don't want a hardware wallet that touches the computer, right? That's connected to the USB. It's like, you know, the targeting of people with Bitcoin and crypto in general is just going to increase, right? Because it is uncensorable money. Even some of the shitcoins are, right? And, you know, the bad guys rather have uncensorable money that they can take it from you and go spend elsewhere than have USD, right? That it's a lot harder for them to launder to get back to whatever they want to spend. So I think that this industry is only going to grow more until most people can't buy on-chain anymore. And then it starts to become just bigger entities. But we have a good decade between now and then. So, you know, stack your sats, you know, on a hardware wallet, put in your cold card, keep it cold, make sure you have metal backup. So if the house burns, you're fine. Just follow the basic advice. I created this website, it's bitcoinsecurity.org. Like, very basic advice there. You know, it creates a little rabbit holes if you want to go in and sort of improve things further and get more complicated, but the basics are there. It should help you at least, like, you know, exist without getting robbed too easily.
Yeah. Do you think that that is going to be, I guess, like, more as Bitcoin kind of increases, is that one of your fears here that we're going to see, I guess, like, more scammers, more things kind of come about? I mean, we just saw Bybit get hacked or something like that. They lost a bunch of ETH and then they converted it over to Bitcoin. So is that, I guess, like, you know, there's always FUD around Bitcoin. Part of it is it's used for by criminals. So it seems like that kind of growing industry is not going to help.
Yeah, Bitcoin is dark money, right? It's the money that the government can't see. So, you know, it's going to be used by good and bad people. The reality is, yes, these things are only going to grow. You're only going to have more people using Bitcoin for things you don't want or taking Bitcoin from people. Because it's such good money, you know, it's the perfect money. So, you know, yes, it's going to grow, but the solutions are pretty good and they're only going to get better too. Right. I mean, it is remarkable that you can have a cold card is a $200 device. Right. And it gives you like an insane amount of security. Like, you'd have to work for a high security facility, you know, inside the Pentagon to have the level of security, right? Like, you need trillions of dollars to have the security with fiat, where, you know, you have $200 and you get like similar security asymmetry with a little device, right? It's pretty cool that way. So everything that empowers the individual empowers the good individual and also the bad individual. So that's not going to change in that sense. I think we just need to educate more people so they're doing things in a way that they don't get robbed. You know, like, and just watch it from the bleachers, you know, let the circus play out and see where we go.
Now, with that, right, we've talked about in the Bitcoin space, they've been shouting from the rooftops the now they fight us stage. Is this, you know, I guess something that you're kind of, I guess, foreseeing? I know you're saying stay off the news, but it seems like, you know, the government's trying to, in a sense, embrace crypto. I don't like using that word, but I've kind of had the theory that at least in the United States, that they don't dislike Bitcoin. They just want to know what you're doing with it, which means they want to be able to track you, which means, you know, the Lightning wallets like Wallet of Satoshi and all these others that we've seen that don't require KYC, they're banning them in the US. And I think, you know, that they just want to know basically what you're doing with your money, which is, you know, obviously the exact opposite of the ethos of Bitcoin. So do you see it kind of in a similar sense from, you know, owning a business and kind of seeing working in the Bitcoin space, like how the governments and potential regulators are coming at you?
Yeah, I mean, I think like the more you try to remove yourself from the system, right, the more the system tries to grab, like it gets grabby, right? And it's a losing proposition for them. Like, there really is not much they can do, mostly because of flag theory, right? So, like, as long as America has enough enemies that hold Bitcoin as well, and people who are individually Bitcoin holders, we're fine. Again, it's one of those things. It really does not worry me. I think people are just like jaded, right, when it comes to money, because it's been such an uphill battle. But I think that sentiment is from being jaded, and so they sort of, I mean, everything is happening the way that it was designed, right? That's why my handle on social media is deterministic optimism. It really is, like, you know, I'm a skeptically optimist at heart, right? Like, I feel like I look at things like, how is it going to break? But I know it's going to work. I really can't see anything right now that worries me. Like, you know, there's all kinds of FUD, right? There used to be the FUD, oh, what if the internet breaks? Well, I mean, I sent a transaction on ham radio, right? So, like, just look, shut up, right? Like, we can do this. You know, it's all about just, like, addressing the edge cases on the FUD. But edge cases are not part of normal life. So if we address those, people become a little bit less pessimistic, but they can't help themselves, right? People are jaded. People are tired. People have too much stress in their lives, right? And they're not going to be thinking about the edge cases in a way. It's like, oh, no, but you could do that, right? Like, it's kind of like the quantum computer FUD, right? Like, you know, if we break SHA-256, airplanes fall off the sky before Bitcoin stops, yeah. Right? So like, is it a concern? Not really. No, not in the near term. And we can change the algo, right? So all these things are addressable because this is man-invented technology. And I always bet on humans overcoming adversity through engineering than I bet on the doomerism of gold bugs, right? Gold bugs is always, oh my God, the world's going to end. I need gold. No, you don't need gold. You need lead, right? Because you're going to need to shoot people. So gold is actually second to bullets. So I rather sort of like bet on a system that thinks like that essentially accounts for human ingenuity, like Bitcoin is, and sort of live my life that way.
No, I hear you with that, and I think that's interesting, and I like the way you're lining this out, because I've had a couple conversations. I believe it was with Saifedean and American HODL, and they both kind of said similar things where, you know, in order for us to get to a Bitcoin standard, they don't think that the current system has to break. It's just going to be kind of like, you know, as Parker Lewis describes it, a gradually then suddenly, where more and more people are going to develop and live on a Bitcoin standard until eventually everybody's doing it, right? And it's just going to be that transition. Like when we had the internet and that technology was embraced, it didn't require everybody to full-fledged, you know, fall off the face of the earth and everything to crash. Same thing with the automobile, right? Like everybody didn't go crash and burn when the car was invented.
Electricity. I mean, yeah. The FUD in electricity was huge. You know, yeah. Oh my God, you're going to die. Look, you know, if you just touch it, you die. Yeah, don't touch.
Yeah. So,
you know, like, boom.
I mean, why do you think that there's always this fear of change then?
Well, because like, you know, like we're monkeys, right? And it's very easy to forget that, right? Like when you lived in nature and you had a very simple existence, you know, you had an environment, you're highly highly integrated into that environment. You're highly dependent on that environment, you know? So like, you know, if that deer didn't pass that path, you know, you starve. Like, you know, like when you had like a weather event that was a little bit off, you know, like you get drowned. Right, like it was very complicated. People would pray to the sun so that it shows up the next day, right? You know, it's and if you live in a winter city, it disappears, right? Like, I mean, if you live north enough, it disappears for a few months. So like you really have to pray to show up again. So essentially, we ascribe fear or other sort of forces to the things we can't sort of assimilate internally. And I think, like, you know, I don't know, maybe start praying for SHA-256 not to be broken, you know, if that gives you comfort. But you can't develop technology sort of like being like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously you got the outlook for it with the optimism of everything going forward. So, you know, developing the technology and everything here, you know, seems to be, you know, I guess at the forefront with, you know, the layer threes and everything else. So what makes you the most optimistic about the Bitcoin future and, you know, what you're seeing, maybe some project or something that you see that excites you here, in the next, let's call it 4 years.
I mean, there's just so much being developed right now. You know, there's a lot of work being done on self-custody. There's a lot of work being done on sort of like new MiniScript and TapScript setups to improve and create more safety around self-custody. That's really cool. Who knows, maybe we get covenants on Bitcoin and then we can have on-chain vaults. you know, there's all the Noster work that enables so much freedom and better sort of life for people too, because, you know, you're not dependent on some algo that tries to sell you crap. So, you know, the AI field is really sort of advancing fast. We're getting a lot of great models. You know, it's all open source. It's all pretty bright. I mean, really, it's, if you turn off the TV, it's there's a lot of stuff going on, and you stop worrying about this stuff.
Yeah, and I think you know, this conversation is going to give a lot of people some great optimism. So NVK, why don't you tell people where they could find out more about you and more about CoinKite, and where they could get a cold card?
Yeah, so you can find me on primo.net/NVK. Or on Twitter at NVK. You can find CodeCard on CoinKite.com. You can find BlockLock and all the other stuff we make there. If you want to mess around with some cool AI stuff, check out datamachine.ai. I mean, I have a million projects out there. I'm sure you can find it. This is great.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. I'll put all that in the show notes, so everybody go check out NVK and the great work that he does. And make sure you smash the like, subscribe button, and give it a 5-star rating wherever you're listening to this. And NVK, thanks so much, man.
Thanks for having me, Brendan.
Thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here. And you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guests. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.